Hey there, this is Gaming Steve coming to you from the Game Developers Conference. It's the third and final day. It's Friday, March 11th, and today was the big day. Today was the day that everyone heard about the GDC. Every couple of years, I'd say there's been a few item bombs dropped at either GDC or E3. You know, a couple of years ago, there was the Xbox, which was like a small bomb, and then people kind of knew that was coming. But that really was the first year that GDC hit the mainstream news. 2 years ago at E3, when Half-Life 2 was announced, and nobody knew that was coming, and that completely stole the thunder of every other game, that was huge news. Well, this year, it is not quite as big as Half-Life 2, but pretty big, and that's Will Wright's new game, Spore, which looked absolutely fantastic. There's not that much information about it. He said he'll talk a lot more about it at E3. He even had to get special permission to talk about it at GDC and even show it. But I'm going to go into extreme detail later in this podcast to go through and tell you exactly what I saw and exactly what I experienced and tell you what I think of the game. I can tell you right now, it looks like it's very close to being done. I mean, this is hopefully going to come out in 2005. I mean, I really am excited about it. But before I get into that, let's just go through my standard stuff of getting to GDC and what that was like. If you've been following my other podcasts, you know I've been taking the train to GDC, and I thought I had the routine down, but I got lost this time. I accidentally got on the wrong train, but it wasn't too bad. The BART system in San Francisco was quite nice. Not exactly the same as the subway I'm used to in Manhattan, but pretty easy. Got off, got on the right one, and I was able to get to the conference in time at 9 o'clock. The first conference I saw was this one that was, I'm just looking it up here. Where is it? Where is that one? Oh, yes. How to Raise Venture Capital and Build a Game Company by John Welsh. That was kind of an interesting one. There really wasn't anything great going on in the morning. I thought it would be interesting to hear what independent developers are doing, just because the industry is getting so monstrous. But it was a very good speech, I felt. This guy, John, who used to be with Shockwave.com, started his own company. I forgot exactly what it was called. But it was an excellent speech. He was very informative. He really had a lot of interesting information on how to raise venture capital. And it was actually very, very crowded. But one of the best reasons of going to that speech was it was right across the hall from Will Wright's speech. So Will Wright's speech was at 10:30. Let me look this up, make sure I'm right. Yeah, it was from 10:30 to 11:30. Now, Will Wright's speeches, of course, are incredibly sold out. I mean, you cannot get into them unless you get there early. It's always standing room only, with every inch of the floor covered with people. Now, in the last couple of years, they usually have it in the Grand Ballroom, so this isn't too big of a deal. But every once in a while, they have it in just one of the regular conference rooms, which unfortunately they did again this year. So I got out of the speech, and across the hall was the conference room, and I thought to myself, well, it's not too bad, but there's a line. Now, for those of you who have never been to the Moscone Center, picture a square, and the square itself is the hallway, and the inside and the outside of the square is where the conference rooms are, okay? So picture that. Now, and the actual room where Will Wright is speaking is the right side of the center of the square. So it's way on the right, in the middle of the square. So I get outside and I look, and there's that huge line, and I think to myself, oh my God, no way am I going to wait on this thing. So I look down just to see how long the line goes, and it wraps around two corners. So I'm like, you know what, forget it. I was able to cut the line for the keynote. I'll be able to cut the line for this thing, no problem. So, I just sort of go around the front, and it's 10 a.m. The thing starts at 10:30. I'm sort of milling around the front. There's a couple of other people doing the exact same thing. I figure, we're all going to kind of just sort of merge in. It'll become like a big mass. And sure enough, the line starts moving, and a couple of those guys cut the line, and I sort of, merge in with them too. But then wouldn't you know it, one of the guys was actually paying attention, and he says to me, "Excuse me, sir, will you please go to the end of the line?" And I was totally busted. I'm like, oh man, I'm never going to get in this thing. This line is ridiculous, and God knows how long it is now. So I go around the bend, line keeps going, go around the bend, line keeps going, go around another bend, line sort of stops, thank God. But it almost goes three quarters around the hallway at the Moscone Center. Freaking gigantic line. My only hope was that the line was pretty thin. And I was thinking, you know, hopefully we'll all get in there. So 15 minutes go by. The line's slowly getting in. The guys are saying we're going to get everyone we can in. And I got in. So it wasn't too bad. And I was actually able to run to the right to the front, sit down on the floor in front of the first row, right in front of Wheelwright. So I was actually, in the end, like 5 feet from him. So it wasn't too bad. And I love sitting on the floor, but I was right in the front so I can see everything. So the actual title of Wheelwright's speech was The Future of Content. Now, Will is very infamous for not really talking about anything that has anything to do with the title of his speech. So, you know, the title is irrelevant, and even during his speech, he sort of said that he just made it up. But let me just outline the room for you so you get a full idea of what had happened. So the room is gigantic. It's one of those monstrous ballrooms that has like 100-foot ceilings, and it's holding, you know, it's row after row after row of people. I mean, it's holding 1,000 people easily on the floor. I mean, God knows what it was supposed to hold. Everyone's standing. Every inch of the floor is covered with people. Even on the floor, I mean, I was touching. Everyone was next to me. I was actually touching them because we were just packed in so close. So this room is wall to wall. Will is in the very front of the room. He's at a table. He's maybe 5 feet above the ground. And it's just him with some computers and a microphone. No one else is there. And to the left and the right of him are two very, very large screens where they usually present the slides. Now, as soon as I entered, I noticed something strange, is that the one on the left, the screen on the left had a computer screen, but it was black, and the one on the right had his slides. So 99% of the time, both screens will have the slides. The only time they ever do a split like that is if they're going to show something. So immediately, I was a little suspicious. I was wondering what he was going to do. I thought maybe he was going to show something on The Sims or who knows what. So he starts off the speech. And let me just look. I took copious notes here. I want to make sure you guys get every ounce of what I experienced. And let's see. All right, here we go. So he started his speech, and he was talking about how, you know, they ask him to do this speech every single year, and every single year, he, you know, he sort of doesn't know exactly what to talk about, and he sort of just comes up with the title and then just sort of makes something up. And, you know, he's talking about, and he actually was showing a lot of information and content from last year, and it was nothing really groundbreaking. He was going over how hard it is to create games, and he was going over how difficult it was even to create The Sims, and he was showing the development team for The Sims and The Sims 2 and The Sims and Sims 2 and SimCity and some of his other games, and they're just how big they've become over the years. You know, it was very interesting when you see SimCity is like him or like two people, and then, you know, it just got to hundreds of people for Sims 2. I mean, it was just gigantic. And he was trying to come up with a way to make a game almost create itself. So he was trying to come up with ways to give the user an incredible experience while preserving gameplay. And he was also showing us something about Grand Theft Auto, and it was pretty funny. Like, you know, he dressed this guy up in sort of panties, and he had a really goofy looking hat on and a really goofy shirt, and he had a pink watch, and I mean, he looked totally crazy. And Will was saying how he really liked the game because he would walk around and he would just ride his bike all day, and he was always amazed at how scared these people were of this really silly looking guy. And he said, you know, I really don't know what the gameplay was supposed to be or what the story was supposed to be, but he had a great time playing the game. And his idea of great gameplay is that people create their own stories. Now, this is no big surprise. I mean, Will Wright, almost everything he does, people create their own stories. I mean, The Sims really doesn't have anything to it, really. I mean, you basically just create your own story. So anyhow, from there, he was trying to figure out a way to come up with distributed programming and distributing methodologies. For instance, he was trying to figure out ways to compress huge amounts of data into an extremely small packet. And no one really knew where this was going. Like, now you can see, after this was after about 10 minutes of him talking about The Sims and his gameplay experience, and you can tell, okay, now we're starting to get into the meat of the presentation. So he starts talking about, you know, these methods and these scientists in like Helsinki or somewhere overseas that were coming up with all these crazy methods. And I'm not exactly sure how he transitioned to it, but he's like, here, this sort of gave me some idea. And then he goes, here, let me see. Let me show you something. And then he goes over to the other screen, and you see sort of this cell primordial soup. Okay, so it was sort of yellow, orangish. It looked very pretty, but sort of simple. And there was this, you know, this really nice looking amoeba type cell in the middle. And it had like, it had four little arms on it so it could propel itself. And it looked, you know, it looked pretty cute. I wasn't exactly sure what it was. And the entire screen had pretty much no interface. The only resemblance of an interface was the upper left-hand corner. There was sort of a little icon, almost like War of Warcraft, sort of depicting your character. And then there was three bars. And I couldn't tell exactly what the bars were for. It looked like one of them was health. I'm sure that's what it was. I had no idea what the other two bars were. So almost the entire screen was the world. And then in the upper left-hand corner was the interface. And at the time, he says, here's my little guy, and let me just show you. You know, he's moving him around. And again, it was two-dimensional. It was pretty, and it was very, very slick-looking, but it really didn't look like anything. And he, let me show you. And he was eating little pellets, and he was saying, like, you know, these things I can eat, and these guys are bad. And there was sort of this, like, brown thing that was trying to attack him, and then there was sort of, like, these white blood cells. And the white blood cells would attack him, and that was not good. So, you know, after a while, he's showing us this moving around. He's eating some stuff, and then all of a sudden, a little like larger cell appears. This like little yellow thing. I have no idea exactly how he got that. I think just by eating, it sort of appeared. He never got into it, but from there, he ate that, and then a new menu would come up. He could actually modify the creature, and this looked exactly like The Sims 2, the same style where, you know, they sort of have those little outlines, you know, how they have little outlines for the houses and everything, all the menu items are just sort of this thick outline showing you a depiction of what it is, exactly the same. It's on the left-hand side of the screen, so if you picture all these little menu items, and it's very rounded menus, again, it looks exactly like The Sims 2, and you can click on different items, and he was showing us you can click on different propulsion items, and then it showed you a sub menu that popped out showing your different propulsion methods, and there was different mouths, you know, you could choose from. And again, he was saying that this is where you can customize, and in the center was your creature, and it was sort of gray, it was sort of all gray scaled over it, and it was on a platform that you can rotate around in 3D, so you can see what the creature looked like. So he said, here, let's add something to him. And in the front of the mouth, he added this little spear, the spear that was just poking out. And he showed there was a couple of other different options. So he adds it to his creature. The creature very beautifully morphs into the new creature. And he says, now let's go back into the world. He goes back into the world. He clicks a button. And now his creature's changed. And he says, okay, now let's go attack those little, you know, white blood cell things that were attacking us. And sure enough, he kept popping them and eating stuff, and they were dying. And but the, you know, he said, oh, the brown ones I can't take care of just yet. So, you know, it was pretty interesting at that point. You know, I wasn't exactly sure what to make of it. But then he says, okay, now let's skip forward a little bit. And he presses some buttons, and now you're a little creature in the sea. And at this point, I was like, okay, this game is something bigger. You know, as soon as I saw that, I realized, okay, this is a game. This is not him showing us some example of, like, cell distributed processing or something. But he actually shows this sort of little sea creature. Picture almost like a little mini sea monster, like a little Nessie. It was green, and it just sort of was swimming through the sea, and it was very cute. And he's just, you know, sort of showing us it's swimming through the sea, and it was very beautiful, full 3D. You know, the other area was, it was, when you were in the primordial soup, it was definitely 3D, but it was a 2D. This was full 3D. There was other little creatures. There was tons of these little shrimp creatures. There was like a sea floor. You can see there was some larger creatures here and there, but it was really quite beautiful. And again, he went to the, you know, he went to the character editor and he ate one of those glowing pieces of something that allowed him to go to the character editor. And this time the character editor, as you might imagine, was really detailed. There was a lot more options. He actually clicked on the creature. And now this is where it really got interesting, is that he actually clicked on the creature and he showed the bone structure. So you can see each rib and each skeletal structure of the creature was manipulable. You know, he could add bones, remove bones. You can change the position of the head, and he can make it fatter, thinner. And he was showing us this, and he was saying that the engine that they've written will allow complete morphability of these characters, and you can just sort of make whatever you want. And in fact, he showed a few others, and then what he did is that he loaded up a few other characters. And I mean, you can make anything. I mean, you want to make, he showed a character that had something like, it was like two legs attached to larger legs attached to the body. So it had like eight legs. He showed this creature that sort of had this gigantic head. It almost looked like gigantic Tweety from the Tweety cartoons, and that had a really bad center of balance. He showed these spider-like creatures. I mean, you name it. I mean, basically, as many weird things that you can imagine that are in this world, that was in the game. I mean, it was unbelievable. The engine that they're building that allows you to pretty much create anything. He was also saying that the engine's completely adaptable. It'll determine the speed of your creature depending upon how many legs you give it, the, you know, size of it, the center of gravity, things like that. So some creatures were naturally faster than others. Some had a really bad center of balance. Some were, you know, sleeker. And he showed this, and the engine would just, it would just build it. You know, you can basically take any creature, put mouths anywhere you want, eyes anywhere. He showed this creature that had two heads, one on each side, sort of looked like almost a walking table. And he said every single creature you can imagine is pretty much adaptable. He even made then a Care Bear. I mean, he showed us a full live Care Bear. You know, his other creatures were fantastical, and this was an actual Care Bear. And then he went into this diatribe talking about, like, you know, Care Bears and how the Care Bear world is, how the Care Bear world is centered and all the different characters. But anyhow, then he got back into the game, and his creature, he decided, you know, I really don't want this to be a sea creature anymore. Let's make it a land creature. Let's add some legs to it. So he added two legs on the back, and then he added a leg in the center. So if you imagine almost like Nessie, and take away all the flippers, and it had two legs behind it, in where the hips would be, and then one leg sticking out of his chest. So it was a tripod. And then on its tail, he added a hand. He added this hand onto the tail. So the creature, you know, was, I can't even think of anything it looked like because it was his own creature. And he went back into the world. And then all of a sudden the creature was now walking. And you can see it was walking in the world. So he's gone from cellular structure to sea creature to now walking land-based creature. And it's walking in the world. And again, he says, okay, now everything you see in this world was created by other players. So every single creature in the game are other creatures from other players. So all the content in the game is created by other people. I mean, this is pretty brilliant. I mean, it's like The Sims on steroids. So what happens is that as you people create their creatures, it'll automatically go to a central database. And he was showing, that's where he was getting to, that it takes like 1K of data. The engine will build the creature. He said the creature is about 5 megs each, but each creature's description is about 1K. So whenever you create something new, you can upload it, and it'll automatically, it's all automatic, that'll automatically upload it to the central database, download it back to your computer. So every creature created by everyone in the world is now playable on your computer, and that your game will automatically categorize everything, figure out where it should be, what type of creature it is. This is all done automatically. So that's where he was sort of going about, you know, content created by players. So if you think about it, this guy basically wrote this unbelievable engine, and all the content is created by everyone else. Pretty brilliant. I've seen this done before. The Sims 2 sort of was doing this in The Sims, but never to this level. I mean, this is the game. So from there, he was walking around. He said, okay, now let's go kill something, which of course got this huge, huge, you know, cheer from the crowd. And there were sort of these little bunny-type creatures jumping around. And, you know, it looked like a very, just to give you an idea, it was very lush and green. You know, there weren't a ton of trees. It looked like, you know, something you would see almost like in the Amazon. It was, you know, it was something you could imagine that would take place, you know, 10 million years or 100 million years ago, like when the dinosaurs roamed the earth. So he said, let's go kill something. He attacks one of these little creatures, and, you know, it was great fun. He's attacking it. He's ripping it to shreds. There's blood coming out of it. And then before you know it, the creature's dead. And the animation was absolutely fantastic. It wasn't perfectly lining up, but when he went to eat the creature, you could actually see the his creature, we'll call it Will's creature. Will's creature would actually pull sections off of the little creature he was eating. And he said that everything's adaptable. Like, you can pull off the arm and it'll eat the arm. You can pull off the head, it'll eat the head. Since it's all sort of component-based and you can rip the components apart. So, again, he was like, you know, dragging it. It was really funny. Like, you know, there was a little hill. He was dragging it up the hill. And you could actually see, you know, the creature would look like your dog dragging something across the carpet, something heavy. I mean, it was actually putting its face down, backing up, dragging it, this nice trail of blood on the sand, and eating it, you know, taking pieces out, chewing them, swallowing them, going back for some more. I mean, it looked as realistic as you can imagine. There definitely was a physics engine of some sort in there, because after he left, you can see the creature was on a little hill. The creature actually started to roll down the hill a little bit. So I noticed that. So then all of a sudden he's like walking around a little, and then he said, whoa. And then all of a sudden you saw this huge spider creature. It had, you know, it looked like a spider, as you might imagine. It had like, I think it was six legs. It was very similar to that sort of spider-like creature in the last Star Wars movie, that one that had no, you know, that very large, that spider creature in the Colosseum. Kind of looked like that a little, not exactly. It had more of a spider-ishy head. So he's like, okay, you know, got to get out of here because I don't want to die. So he goes, you know, but my creature's very fast. So he's running his creature up and about, and he's running him around, and the spider creature's following him, and he runs for a little while, for about 15, 20 minutes, and then he's like, okay, let's see if coast is clear. And the coast was clear. So at that point, he then decided, okay, you know, let me jump ahead a little bit more. And he said that, you know, something he always liked was monkeys with guns. He thought it was a very funny image. So he says, let's jump ahead. And then, oh, actually, let me, before that, he said, oh yeah, let's mate. So he decides to mate with another creature. So he sends out his mating call, and he presses a button, and a sort of echo stream comes out, and you hear like, awk, 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 and it was very great. And then he hears another one, he looks around, and sure enough, there was another one of Will's creatures, like, sort of at this nest. And he's like, okay, let's go over there, let's see if she's interested. He gawks, she gawks, he goes, okay, looks good. He approaches her, and then all of a sudden, like, you hear, like, sexy, mellow, Barry, you know, sexy music going on. Everyone's cracking up. The two animals are gawking. They're sort of strutting their stuff. It wasn't exactly them having sex, but it was pretty explicit anyhow. I mean, it definitely was, you knew what was going on. And it was very funny. And then at the end, after about 30 seconds of this, you actually saw a small egg appear. And he says, you know, and this is how you create new creatures. And so then he alluded to something about, you know, more. And he said about how he really liked when monkeys were playing with guns. He always thought that was a very funny image. So he skips ahead, and then you saw a little village. And then I'm thinking to myself, oh my God. I mean, the entire audience is gasping. They're starting to realize this game is crazy. I mean, they can start, you know, you can kind of see where it was going, but you're realizing that this is going to be a big game. This is going to have a lot of stuff in it. So he shows his village. There's a hut. There's a whole bunch of these, you know, of his creatures just sort of standing around. There was one collecting fruit. There was a couple of them just sort of hanging out. I'd say there was about 10 of Will's creatures total. And he goes to a new menu. And this is where you can buy items. And I guess you can create items there too. He didn't really go into the creation, but there was, he said it was like Diablo at that point, where there was a lot of items you can manage. So he said, you know, let's go over here. And he's showing this different items. Let's go to the weapon rack. So he drops off a weapon rack. And it was like a weapon rack with where you would put spears. and he drops in the middle of the town, and three of Will's creatures run over. They're looking at it. They're all excited. They're, like, jumping around. And Will's like, oh, I guess they like it. They're all looking at it. They're looking at it. And then they all grab weapons, and they're all holding weapons in their hands. So if you remember, they have hands on their tails. So imagine these sort of Nessie-like sea creatures with three legs jumping around with their tails above their heads, holding a spear with the tip straight down. And they're all jumping around, and they're all having a good time. Everyone's laughing. It's very funny. It's very cute. And then he says, okay, let's drop something else there. He drops a campground fire on the in the middle of the camp, and then he drops a drum. And sure enough, he drops the drum. All of a sudden, two of the creatures go next to the drum. They start pounding on the drum with their little hands, and the creatures with the spears start dancing around the campfire, and everyone was cracking up. And obviously, this would. It looks like it's some aspect of the game that allows them to increase their intelligence and understand how, you know, how to make a society. So it was great. You know, he said, okay, let's now increase my hut. And he goes to this area where there's these huts, and he makes his hut bigger. And he said that the huts will allow you to do more. It increase, you know, basically make your creature smarter. And then he showed something about the brain. And he showed this is where, you know, if you save up your points, I guess, you know, different types of items on your creatures cost points. You save up your points, you can add them to your brain and make yourself smarter. So from there, he said, okay, now let's jump ahead again. And he shows a huge city. I mean, at this point, the entire crowd is gasping. There's a city. It is beautiful. I mean, this beautiful city. It sort of almost looked like a gumdrop city. I know it sounds crazy, but it was extremely colorful. All the objects were very ovalish. You know, it really was a fun, happy place to be. There was no straight lines in the city. Everything had a curve to it. The walls were curved. All the roads were curved. There was just curves everywhere. The windows were curved. So imagine now there's dozens of Will's creatures running around the center of the city. It wasn't a huge city. I'd say it had about 6 or 7 skyscrapers, a couple of roads. You couldn't tell what any of the buildings did, however. It just looked like it was a mash of buildings. And he said that this is where the game sort of becomes like a mini Sim City, and you could actually then build the buildings. He actually showed us then the building interface. Now, all the interfaces for building a creature, creating items, and then creating buildings was exactly the same interface, and it looked like it had the exact same morphing, you know, properties. For instance, he took a building and he added a little side building to it, and he added a little tower on top of it. He dropped it in, and it would automatically color in the building. That was something else. Since everything created in the crater is all grayscale, there's no coloring. You cannot do any of that, it appeared. Then maybe that's another interface, but he didn't show it. So that was really the creator was really just to create the general shape of the item. So he creates this item, he drops it in the square, all the little creatures are cheering, he goes, okay, it seems like they like it, and he said that that's sort of a main way for you to know whether you're doing the right things or not, is depending upon their moods. And so from there, you know, he was saying that all the buildings are shareable. He was explaining how, you know, everything in this game is built by the community. Everything. The creatures are built by the community. The buildings are built in the community. He alluded to that even plant life is built by the community. It looks like just pretty much everything. Everything in the game is built by the community. So he said, okay, you know, let's sort of zoom up a little. He zooms up, you know, and so he's pretty high up over the city, and let's sort of go over here. And he zooms over, he sort of moves around on the world. And at this point, you can see a lot more of the world. And there was a definite curve to the world. It looked like it was a very small world. And then he goes to another city, and he says, here's another city, completely different. And he was saying how they have different culture, they grew up in a different way. Their architecture was different. They had, everything was very futuristic. It looked almost like something from Metropolis. Everything was metal. Everything was square. Everything was grid-like. I mean, it was just a totally different city. All the creatures even walked in straight lines, while in Will's city, they all sort of wandered all over the place. I mean, you can tell there was a real big difference between cities. And again, he sort of alluded, you know, this is all done, you know, this is done by the computer, and that the actual types of cities, the computer, when it downloads other people's items from the server, it'll categorize these items based upon properties he didn't go into. So you can tell that this was sort of very modern, very computeristic, steel-based city, while Will's city was more of an Adobe-style city, more of an Earth-based fun city. And then all of a sudden he says, okay, let's take a look, and there was little tanks coming out of the city. He's like, uh-oh, that ain't good. So let's go back to my city. And, you know, the crowd's like, oh, my God. I mean, I probably heard people saying, oh, my God, about 50 times during this presentation, and I myself was just blown away over and over again, because you're realizing now this is like, there's more to this game. So he goes back to his city. He says, okay, let's build an airplane. And he has this little airplane, and the plane was very funny looking. It sort of had this little, like a blimp with a propeller. He builds two of them, and he goes, okay, guys, go get them. And they fly off into the distance. And he goes, well, I guess they're peaceful cowards. So the guy flies off in the distance, everyone laughs, the tanks come up, they start blasting the crap out of Will City, one of the buildings gets destroyed, beautiful explosions. It actually was almost a shock, because the rest of the game was so playful and fun that the explosions were actually almost violent. It was very, very interesting. So from there, we got to the next part of the game, which is that he says, okay, you know, let's take a look at the entire planet. And he zooms out, and again, the crowd's like, oh my God. And you see this incredibly beautiful planet. And he shows that really at this level, when you get up that high, that, you know, all these items are really iconographic. You know, they're not to scale. And he sort of showed that. He showed, like, the city becoming a real city, and then you got to a point where it would convert down to an icon of the city. It wasn't a true representation of the city. It still looked like it. I mean, you can definitely tell the metal city was sort of silverish, while his city was sort of clay-like, and you can tell that that was his city. So he zooms out. Everything's exaggerated, it looks like. You know, there's huge hills and mountains and valleys. It almost looked like Little Nemo's World or something. I mean, it was beautiful. It had this beautiful halo around it. And then you can actually see there were stars. There was the sun in the background. I mean, it really was one of the most beautiful examples of seeing a planet, you know, in a game I've seen. You can see there was little iconographic items of people flying around. You could see the tanks. You could see the explosions going on in the city in the background. So, and it looked like there was approximately maybe like 10 cities throughout the world. And, you know, he's showing the city off to everybody. And, you know, everyone, he's saying, you know, well, because eventually if you get smart enough, you can get sort of a wonder. I'm not exactly sure what he was calling them, but one of the main goals of the game was to get something called a UFO. So he gets the UFO, you know, he presses a button, he cheats, he shows us the UFO, and it looked like a silly, goofy UFO that you'd imagine. So, you know, he's flying around the UFO, he's flying it around, and he's like, okay, let's go look around the world. And he goes, up, here's those spider creatures that were terrorizing us early. Let's have some fun. He uses the UFO to suck up one of the creatures and abduct them. He abducts one. He tries to abduct them all, but they sort of scatter, and he couldn't get them. He goes, well, okay, I guess one is enough. And he says, okay, now let's, you know, let's have some fun with the creature. And he flies up, and he goes, okay, you know, not only is this world, let's zoom out a little bit more. And then he zooms back, and you see the solar system. And once again, the entire crowd's like, oh my God, this is nuts. So the solar system was beautiful. Everything in the game, I mean, I keep saying this over and over again, you know, how beautiful it was. Again, it sort of had that soft edge that The Sims 2 has. But it just, you know, everything was just stylized art. It was just really nice. So you see the entire solar system. There was the sun in the middle, and if you rolled over the sun, he showed if you roll over, it'll say the name of the sun itself. There was one planet he rolled over. It was called Roaster. And then he goes, here's our planet. I forgot the name of it, but then the next planet. And you can say they were moving around pretty fast. I'd say the planets would do a full cycle around the sun in less than 5 minutes. There was dotted lines showing where they go. Again, it looks like something you would picture in a science textbook. Then there was an asteroid field, and then there was a few more planets. There was, I think, two or three other planets past the asteroid field. So he's like, okay, let's fly back down. Let's go to one of these planets. And he goes to this rocky planet. And he's like, he's showing it around. He says, take a look. And you notice it's completely different. It doesn't look anything like our world. And it, you know, and it was. It was totally different terrain. Totally rocky, you know, all gray, very craggy. And he says, all right, let's see. He drops the guy down, his spider creature, on the surface, and he promptly explodes into a sea of blood. Again, it's a little surprising how violent this game is in that aspect. Of course, the crowd loved it. Will asks everyone, do you know why that happened? And then he goes, oh yeah, I forgot. There's no atmosphere on this world. So he says, okay, let's cheat a little bit more. You know, later, eventually, you can get the ability to make an atmosphere. And he fires, you know, he goes a little bit above the world, and then he fires, it almost looks like a missile, into the world. It actually hits the world and morphs the world upward, almost making a volcano, spewing something into the air. So he spews, you know, he does this three times total, and wherever he fires this missile, this, you know, terraforming missile, it'll morph the world and change it so that it is actually modifying the atmosphere. He says, oh yeah, by the way, you could also build a colony. He drops down a colony. It actually looks exactly like one of his cities, only it had a nice little bubble on it. And he said, oh yeah, and if you started to colonize the water, and everyone's like, oh, if you colonize the water on your world, this is what your cities look like, and if you wanted to start colonizing the sea. So at this point, you have to think about this. You start off as a cell, and then you grow yourself up into a sea creature, and then into a land-based creature, and then you have to build a small society, and then from there, you have to build a larger society, and then you're eventually building a city, you're conducting wars, you're taking over the world, you're building UFOs, you're going to other planets, you're colonizing those planets, and then you're also building underground sea bases. So, I mean, this is mind-boggling. At this point, afterwards, he said, okay, let's cheat again. He presses some buttons, and instantly, it's like God mode. I think you can do this later in the game if you get good enough. He's, you know, the entire planet transforms. Oh, that's right. He called it the Genesis device. He goes, here's our Genesis device. He presses buttons. It looked like, you know, there's thunder going off. There's clouds forming. It actually looked just like the Genesis device from Star Trek II. And instantly, you know, within 15 seconds, the world transforms from a rocky surface to a beautiful green based lush world with rivers on mountains. It was beautiful. And, you know, he says, you know, and then you can colonize this world. And, you know, he then went over to show exactly what he was thinking. You know, he said, when you're a cell, the game is like Pac-Man. When you're a creature, the game is like Diablo. When you're up to the tool based era, when you're building the huts, the game was sort of like Populous. And then when you're in the city era, it's sort of like Sim City. When you're in the world era, it's sort of like Civilization. And then when you're in the galaxy area, or not the galaxy, if you're in the world building area, it was a little bit like Mu 2. So from the next level, you know, he talks about this a bit, and then he says, okay, eventually you get Interstellar Drive. So he pulls back again, and you know, we're now past the solar system, and you actually see a small portion, the stellar nursery. And again, everyone's like, oh my God. Again, absolutely beautiful. You know, he showed inspiration was really real, you know, like the most beautiful pictures you can imagine from astronomy magazines, and that was his inspiration. It looked like it, you know, there was nebula, there was red giants, he showed black holes, and he said each had their own properties. He wasn't going into them, but you know, you have to be careful of them if you go near them. So I was like, you know, the black holes looked really cool, the white dwarf looked awesome, and you know, again, it basically picture the real thing, only stylized a little, so it's like a little bit softer on the edges. And he goes, okay, now let's sort of find some other society. This is my SETI tool. And again, everything he sort of said, you know, he got from his real life experience. And he's sort of putting his hand over systems, over suns, listening for sounds. He goes, this is where I'm listening for a radio check. And he's listening, and you don't hear anything. And then eventually he runs his hand over one star that actually had some radio coming off of it. And he says, oh, okay, I guess there's something over there. Let's go check it out. He then flies down, the UFO flies down into the solar system, and in the solar system there was a sun in the middle, there was a huge asteroid belt, and one planet. And he says, oh, I guess there was some accident or something going on here. And also, by the way, when you're seeing this, the solar system, there's comets flying around. I mean, there was comets that were flying into the sun. I mean, this really is as stylized and as beautiful as you can imagine. You know, it really, the attention to detail was incredible. So he's like, let's go down. He flies down to the planet. You know, again, totally different. You know, he said that, you know, these planets are actually planets from other players. So again, everything in this game is shareable. Everything. You know, the game creatures, the planets. I mean, it's just nuts if you think about it. So everything that anyone ever makes in this game will be in your game. So it's just one ridiculously huge community. It's almost like the internet on this game. So what he does is he zooms down. There's only one civilization on this planet. He goes over to it. He goes, okay, let's go check it out. Totally different creature, totally different architecture. Again, it looked a little bit science-y. It was similar to the one on Will's planet, but different. I don't remember what the creatures looked like. They were totally different. He went over to them and he said, okay, now this is where you try to communicate with them. And his inspiration for that was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where you would sort of communicate using a mixture of notes, lights, and sound. And he said, okay, let's try. And then sure enough, it's sort of like, doo, 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 doo. You know, he's doing the whole Close Encounters bit. Sounds are going off. The lights are coming out of the UFO. Everyone's cracking up. Unfortunately, people were laughing so hard, you couldn't exactly hear what was going on in the game. And all of a sudden, the creatures go crazy, and they're firing missiles at the ship. And Will's like, oh, well, I guess that didn't work. They don't seem to be friendly. And he's like, okay, let's attack back. He attacks back. Nothing's really happening. And he says, you know, I guess our weapons aren't really strong enough. He's like, oh, well, let's leave this place. He zooms back out. And he says, you know, well, at this point, I have some other weapons besides those. You know, everything in this game has a Uber level. And everyone's like, uh-oh. Sure enough, he presses a button. A missile that looked very similar to the terraforming missile, slowly glowing missile, glowing, approaching the planet, hits the planet. You see an explosion, and everyone's thinking, okay, there goes the city. But then all of a sudden, the entire planet exploded into thousands and thousands of little bits. It was absolutely spectacular. One of the best explosions I've ever seen in these games. It was unbelievable. I mean, the crowd went, as you might imagine, ridiculously wild. The entire planet exploded. He zooms back out, and you see the solar system, and there's like, he said, oh, well, at least we made a new ring, and there's a new ring of asteroids where the planet used to be. He then went on and saying, you know, at this point, the game really is, you can become like Star Trek. You know, you can go around and try to be peaceful and make contact with other civilizations, or you can be like War of the Worlds and just destroy everything you see. And again, it was just astounding. And then he's like, okay, let's zoom out one more time. And then he zooms out and you see the entire galaxy. It was a spiral galaxy. There was a little square showing, you know, in the galaxy where your home planet was. And again, it was beautiful. He didn't go past that. You did see other galaxies in the background. I pretty much can guarantee, I can't guarantee, but I'm pretty sure you can go to those two. I would not be surprised if you can zoom out again. And the reason for that is said that his inspiration for this game was The Powers of Ten. And I don't know if you've ever seen The Powers of Ten. It's one of my favorite books and also short films ever made. In fact, The Simpsons the other day did a parody of it in their intro, just like last week, where you start off in someone's hand, and then you zoom out by 10. And so first you zoom out, you know, first you zoom out and you see the person's hand, and you see the person, then you see, you know, you keep zooming out, then you see the city, then you see the world, then you see the solar system, et cetera, until you see the entire galaxy. And then it actually goes backwards where you go all the way down to the atom level. So you can go to the bookstore. It's a great book. Anyhow, he was saying how that was his inspiration. So I'm very confident that when this thing is released, I'm sure you could eventually take over the entire galaxy, the entire universe, not even the galaxy, the entire universe. You could, as I said, there were other galaxies in the background, and my experience with what he showed us was that anything you can see, you can interact with. It will be interesting to see how handles the entire universe, to see if it wraps around itself or whatever. So that was, and then he pressed the button. The title screen came up. It said Spore. Nothing really changed. The galaxy was slowly rotating in the center of the screen. And then, of course, in the bottom, it said Copyright 2005, Electronic Arts, All Rights Reserved. Will then said that he really cannot say anything about the game, that he even had to get special permission just to show the game at GDC. He said at E3, they'll talk all about it, and they'll show a lot more. Again, it was called Spore. and it looks absolutely fantastic. I can tell you that the game looked very close to being done. It looked like the music was the only thing. Although the music was very, very good, it looked like some of it was placement music. For instance, when there was a battle going on and people were fighting, you can hear they were using the Star Trek music. They did dun, 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 dun. So, you know, there was music like that. I don't think they exactly have the rights to put that in the game. But again, it really was an unbelievable game. It looks like, you know, the graphics were just spectacular, the amount of freedom. And he went on to explain, you know, that the purpose of this game really is that you play the game, and then by the time you get to the very end, then it becomes a sandbox. That the other games he would play, you know, he created, and even other games that are made, that first you start out with the sandbox, and then there's sort of a game. Here, the game becomes the sandbox at the very end. And the story is whatever you want it to be. You know, if you just want to just stay at the world level, you can stay at the world level. If you want to go to the galactic level, you can go to the galactic level. If you just want to build creatures all day and that's it, you can build creatures all day. It looked like it really was the game you wanted it to be. The creature editor, again, I cannot stress enough that this, it looked like basically a very stylized 3D graphic editor that you would see in like 3D Studio Max or something. It had full abilities to add pretty much anything, any type of creature you can imagine. If you wanted to make a man-eating, walking, talking shark, you could do that. If you wanted to make a half-man, half-tarantula, you can do that. If you wanted to make a whole society of Care Bears, you could do that. You know, it was like impossible creatures times a gazillion. The only thing that might even come even a little bit close is the character creator in City of Heroes, but this dwarfs that. I mean, if you think the character creator looked amazing, that's nothing compared to character creator in Spore. Again, if you have any questions, I didn't take any pictures. I beyond regret not taking pictures, even though I was 5 feet in front of the monitor that this was going on. But there was a guy there yelling at people who were taking pictures, and he was literally like 2 feet from me. So I really didn't want to have my camera confiscated or something. And from what I've been able to see, no one else has really posted pictures on the net. If I find some, I will definitely put some links on the site so you can see what it looked like. I know words really don't do this justice. And that a lot of, I'm actually a little surprised. I thought when I came back from the GDC tonight, there would be a lot more news on this. I don't know if EA is doing a gag order or something on these sites. I'm not exactly, or maybe some of these news sites already have exclusives and they don't want to mess things up. Again, I'm not 100% sure what happened, but there's really not that much information. And the little bit of information I've seen has been kind of negative. I'm really surprised. I mean, I guess people are like, oh, this game is too much. It's trying to do too much. Again, I think something else he says is that it's a little light. For instance, it's not SimCity, it's SimCity Lite. It's not RTS, it's RTS Lite. There are RTS elements, but it doesn't look like you had a huge amount of resource and management, if any. It really seemed like it was a very simple game in that level. But, you know, it seemed like there was enough. I mean, there was definitely was enough fighting in the game that you can go and conquer other people. And he explained that there was non-violent ways to take over other societies. Again, there were so many details in the speech. You know, I hopefully covered pretty much all of it. If I didn't and you have some questions, feel free to write me, steve@gamingsteve.com. I will answer any and all questions of everything I saw. I took copious, I have pages here of notes, so I wouldn't forget anything. So, once again, it looked fantastic. I hope it comes out this year. This is sort of the game I've been personally dreaming of ever since I was a kid in biology class, learning about cell structure, and I thought it'd be really cool. I've even talked about this with a few friends of mine. We always said, you know, wouldn't that be great if you could just make a game? You know, I mean, if you think about a Civilization, I mean, that's perhaps the greatest game of all time, in my opinion. You know, that is what Civilization is. I mean, I'm not telling you guys anything new here, but this game allows you Civilization times a million. I mean, you create a creature, a society, a world, a universe on your computer, and it is populated by everyone else's. So you can create some really cool creature. I'm going to be very interested to see what the community is like, if people's creatures are voted on or if some are more popular than others. I mean, I can only imagine this game is going to be a ridiculous monster hit. My only wonder is because all the content is created by players, and I mean all content, what is EA's expansion packs? Because as you know, if it's anything by Will Wright, you have to have a million expansion packs, and I just wonder what the expansion packs are going to be for this. Maybe it's new creatures, maybe you buy them online and you download them, which actually I think would be preferred for myself. Maybe, who knows, because, you know, the issue is if you build an entire universe and it looks like there's so much in the game already, I'm not exactly sure what they can add to the game when every aspect of the world and the universe is covered. Who knows? I'm sure they were thinking about this. It looks like they've been working on this quite a bit. The game looks like it is very close to being shippable. I'm not 100% sure. Then again, The Sims 2 also looked like it was shippable last, or like 2003. It really looked like that was done, but that took an extra year or so before it came out. I guess we'll find out more at E3. So I've been talking about this now for, wow, for almost 40 minutes. So let me go on for the rest of my day at GDC, the last day. And let me go through my notes here. I have so many pages of notes on this. Oh, yeah, and of course, here something I missed. At the end of the speech, he got a huge standing ovation, people cheering, people going crazy, and literally that's all people were talking about for the rest of the conference. I mean, they had a little snack afterwards. It was the snack time. People were getting their, you know, their coffee or their soda, and they were getting little snacks, and people were just talking about it. I mean, that's all I heard about for the rest of the conference was Spore this, Will Wright that. I mean, I was just thinking what Peter Molyneux, I wonder if he was there, because this is basically the game Peter Molyneux has always wanted to do. I mean, it even had sort of his morphing graphic engine, you know, that's sort of in all of his games, like Black and White 2 has it, and the one in Spore looks better. I mean, I'm really wondering if Peter Molyneux was like, well, he's not dead yet, but if he was rolling over in his grave. I mean, I almost feel bad for the guy, because this looks like this is the game that he's always dreamed of making his entire life, and Will Wright's going to do it. Anyhow, a lot of people were talking about it. So after that, you know, I decided to run over. I had some Maxis. I might as well have a little bit more Maxis. There was a talk going on about The Sims 2. It was... Oh, I'm on the wrong page here. I'm just looking at my little notes. It was Scripting and Sims 2, Coding the Psychology of Little People by Jake Simpson. Jake Simpson was one of the head programmers in Maxis, one of the lead engineers who actually helped create the scripting language. So I went over to there. And he even alluded that he's been real busy in the last couple of years working on a secret project, which he hinted that was Spore, he said, which should be no secret to you if any of you just came from Will Wright's talk. But he went into, again, this was a very, very good talk. I actually like The Sims 2 quite a bit. I think it's an excellent game compared to The Sims 1, especially. I even went to go look to get the expansion pack. That's a whole other topic. It was $35, and I was like, it's a little too much for Sims 2 expansion pack. I mean, the only people I know who can really get away with in a $35 expansion pack is Blizzard. So I didn't get it yet, but he went through and he showed us, basically, there was a scripting language. There was a tool that they used to create everything in The Sims 2. Every object actually has, an, you know, has scripts attached to it. For instance, he showed there was a menu showing like who can interact with the object, whether it was an adult, a toddler, a teenager, elderly. It was very interesting. And then he showed even the scripting language of how when something tries to interact with it, it was just a series of if-then loops. It looked not exactly the simplest thing in the world to use. It looked like there was about, oh, I don't know, 1,000 or a couple of thousand different items that you could script, but it was very comprehensive. And something of interest he was saying is that everything in the world is an object. Everything. Even The Sims 2. The Sims 2 just have some, The Sims themselves. The Sims have a few more variables associated with them, but The Sims are objects, just like the objects are in the game. So, again, it was a very interesting talk. It was very well done. Something of interest was that there were some people from Maxis sitting in front of me in the conference room who were basically saying, oh, you know, Will Wright, did you hear about it? I guess they knew about Spore. I don't know if they work with him directly or know him. And they were saying, it didn't seem to be a big surprise to them. They were saying, oh, yeah, Will. And they were saying how, you know, he's very good at these speeches. He really breadcrumbs them very well, and that he really leads people down, and that this was really going to be a big deal, because he said, you know, this when Black and White was announced a few years ago. And again, these are people, this is not what I said. People in front of me, they were saying, you know, Black and White was talked about a few years ago and released Peter Molyneux. That made huge news. And that was just 1/10 or 1/50 of what this game is. So that was pretty interesting. Again, I was a little surprised by how little press it's gotten so far. Maybe we'll find out more. So after that, after I went to that talk, it was time for lunch. It was about 1 o'clock, and you know, I wasn't quite hungry yet. I walked over to the area where the independent game developers are. I'll post a picture on the site, but sort of this area where there's about 35, 40 stations. It's just sort of a computer with the name of the game above a monitor, and there's just a row of them on the second floor where you can actually play them, and there's representatives from each game, and there's from the Independent Game Developers Choice Awards. There was one that won a lot called Wick that I actually have heard about. I went over, talked to the guys. The game looked absolutely beautiful. I'll try to put a link on the site so you can see it. It won one of the awards, one of the best of games. And I took a look at some of the others. There's a lot of student projects there from like DigiPen and stuff. So I didn't really take a look at those. There was, you know, a few others. I was talking a bit. But then I went upstairs, went to the third floor, got some food. And today was turkey with chicken. It looked like roast beef. Turkey with cheese. It looked like the roast beef was by far the most popular, however. And the vegetarian was there. So sitting minding my own business, something interesting did happen is that all of a sudden I'm sitting there and a woman comes up to me dressed in an Intel uniform asking if she can borrow my badge so she can get some lunch. And I was like, what? You know, being a New Yorker, it's not exactly unheard of for weirdos to, or should I say, nice looking weirdos to come up to you and start talking to you for no reason. But she was basically saying, oh, you know, could I borrow your badge because they don't allow exhibitors to get free lunch. And I was a little hesitant because, you know, without my badge. And she's like, look here, I'll give you all my stuff. Let me just borrow your badge. So I was like, okay. So she gave me all her stuff and she went over and like literally 30 seconds later, she's like, you know, thanks a lot. You know, she's like, she's just really hard for the day. She doesn't have a ton of money and she really appreciates it. So, you know, a little adventure during lunch. After that, I went down to the showroom floor. You know, they close it. It was getting close at like 3:30 or so. And so I decided, you know, take a look at everything one last time. Walked around the showroom floor a bit more. I was talking to some people here and there. I went over to the Sony booth. You know, it was like a mini Sony booth. In the past, at these conventions, they almost never have games. And if they do, it's just a few. Sony and Nintendo and Xbox, they're never there. This is actually the first time I ever seen them. And even their booths were very small. I mean, in the Sony booth, as I probably mentioned before, they only had like maybe like 20 games in most, and most of these were like not exactly the biggest groundbreakers, and there was stuff you've seen before, although half of the booth was dedicated to the PSP, and the other half was dedicated to PlayStation 2, so that was pretty cool. You could play a lot of PSP games. I decided to play God of War. I've been trying to play that game for a while. There was always a line to play it, and I haven't gotten the demo. That game comes out like in a week and a half. That game, man, that game is awesome. I played that game. I usually don't love those fighter-type games. You know, the Devil May Cry, they're good, but I get bored after a while. But that game really just seemed to have a lot in it. The demo, it really was just a demo that you can get. I think it's in some of the magazines this month. But it was a lot of fun. There was a guy next to me who was trying to help me out. So, you know, it was always a little bit more fun playing these action games when someone else is there with you. So, And then the game promptly turned itself off at 3:30. So I didn't get to play it all the way through, and I decided, okay, time to go. So left that conference, and let's see. After that, I went to the last talk of the day. The last talk for the day was, well, there really wasn't a lot to choose from. The last two sessions were, like, I actually missed one session before that, but the last two sessions, there was nothing great going on. So I saw this one that seemed interesting. Building the Impossible, How to Build a Full-Scale MMO for Just Over $1 Million by Andrew Tepper. But I'd have to say, I mean, I don't know Andrew, and I'm sorry, but it really was a bad talk. I mean, we got there, his slides were, I've never seen this in my life. They were purple on purple. And then they were red on purple. You could not read them. And I don't know why on earth this guy would have like bluish purple on a purple background, or have, you know, red type on a purple background. I mean, it was ridiculous. So we had to turn off the lights and had to turn on the lights. It took them 10 minutes just to figure out the lights so this guy can talk. And then when he was talking, he wasn't talking about that much. He actually was talking about how they would really work very hard to create content. They didn't really talk about how he made it for such a small amount of money. They do Tale in the Desert is the game that he does. And I guess he came out with Tale of the Desert 2. Very small company, so they only had 2 full-time people and up to 5 at most. So they created the whole game for just that small amount. He showed like how he'd use tools in the game and how he had the ability to stack items and make art out of them. So that was pretty much how the game would work, and how he would just continuously reuse things that were already built in the game to create content to keep the costs down. You know, this is, you know, it wasn't exactly groundbreaking stuff. The talk was okay. Nothing great. Between the slides being so hard to read and the guy sort of just going off in tangents, I didn't think it was that great of a speech, and sort of a bad way to end the day. But it was sort of interesting. I wish he really got into how they were able to do it for such a small amount, and as opposed to just how they were trying to continuously make the game for such a small amount of money. You know, sort of like go behind the scenes of where, you know, what they spent on, like, you know, what's type of systems. But he did, the only thing he kind of alluded to was the artwork, because someone asked about that, and he said that his artist got, they hired one artist who got all the other artists from an art school. So that definitely keeps the cost down. They do everything for free, and then they have something to publish on their resume. But he also then mentioned that most of his time was spent managing them, and the artist's time was not spent actually doing art. Which you would imagine if you're getting people from the local college who have probably never worked in this professional environment before. So that was it, and then it was time to go. It was the last conference of the day. I sort of filed out. There was a lot of people hanging out. No one really seemed to want to leave. I actually decided, you know, since everything seemed to still be working, the conference room floor was closed, but everything else seemed to be up and going. I walked over to the independent game developers area again and saw some games and played a little. I went over to the bookstore. Saw, you know, they have the books there. They have all the game development books you can imagine. They're like 30% off. I was going to get some, but there was nothing really great that I thought that was all that great. One thing that they did have, which I thought was interesting, is they had a lot of soundtracks to a lot of games. They had like Halo 2 and a few others. I was interested in that, but the line was really long. So I was like, forget it. I'll just get it some other time or buy it online. And then they were closing down the booth. It was a little bit after, about a half hour after the place closed. It ended at 5 today, so it's like 5:30. But I was surprised just how many people were milling around. Usually when this thing ends, everyone just sort of leaves. But there was just thousands of people there. No one seemed to want to go home. And neither did I, to be honest with you. I have a lot of fun at GDC. This was a very interesting one. Having it at the Moscone Center was... It's definitely is very different than in San Jose, because it's a square. While San Jose is extremely long. It's like, imagine the Moscone Center is a cube where all the conferences were on level 2 and level 3, and the actual showroom floor was on the first floor. While at the San Jose Center, it's extremely long, almost like, you know, almost like a ruler, if you imagine, with the conference being in the very center, and then the actual speeches are all the way on the left side and all the way on the right side, and the actual ballroom is outside across the street. So it's sort of more of a campusy feel to it in San Jose. But this is the first and last year it's going to be in San Francisco, from what I heard. Not only is the Moscone Center taken for next year, but in San Jose they're adding something like 65,000 square feet in June, and that's when they're going to have enough room. The one good thing about it this year, it really wasn't nearly, I mean, last year, oh my God, it was so crowded last year. It really was bad. You had to get to every single conference on time, otherwise you cannot get in. But this year, it was crowded, but you can get in. It wasn't nearly as bad as last year. So that's it. I'm done. GDC 2005 is over. We will be here next year. Look for another Gaming Steve later in the week, in which we'll talk about news, reviews, previews, interviews, you know, the whole spiel about the gaming industry. If you have any questions or comments, please write me at steve@gamingsteve.com. I will answer all All emails. That's right. All emails. If you write to me, and if they're good, I will definitely answer them on the air. So until then, this is Gaming Steve signing off, and I will speak to you later in the week. See ya.